This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. Discover the future of trading with IBKR Desktop, Interactive Brokers' next-generation trading platform. Built from the ground up, IBKR Desktop combines powerful features with a unique set of groundbreaking trading tools in a streamlined, intuitive interface. With access to over 150 markets, IBKR Desktop puts global stocks, options, futures, currency, bonds, and funds at your fingertips. And you know, I use this quite regularly. IBKR Desktop includes innovative features like multi-sort, which lets you sort data using multiple factors simultaneously, helping you quickly identify trading opportunities, and the option lattice, which visually highlights key metrics for smarter decisions. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, IBKR Desktop redefines what traders can expect from a trading platform. Experience the future of trading today. Do me a favor, download IBKR Desktop at ibkr.com/desktop. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Market's moving and the pros are thinking about hedging. March is here and we're looking at a bit of a consolidation. The AI hype continues and continues and continues. And our guest today is Thomas Thornton from Hedge Fund Telemetry. All this and much more on episode number 859 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. It's Andrew Horowitz, and welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, where we spend time talking each and every week about financial security ideas, about investing, finance, markets, money, all sorts of things to make sure that you are set for the future. And I hope that we've done a little bit to help you throughout time, because I know that we've put a lot of work into it, and hopefully that is shining through pretty well. We have a great guest today, a few things to talk about ahead of that, and I wanted to mention that one of the interesting things about what happened last week was that markets did see a little bit of a consolidation. I was off for a few days last week, finally getting my sea legs back. I did a bit of a boating tour of the British Virgin Islands. Very, very nice. Beautiful place. Mountainous, gorgeous, good rum drinks, good food. The roti is fantastic. The lobster is fantastic. Just the people, lovely. Water is crystal clear blue. You know, everything that you've seen or heard about it is just what it is. Pretty fantastic place. Not too far from where I am in South Florida to begin with. But one of the things that I want to talk to you about was what happened last week was an interesting situation. Because we had a generally exciting start that fizzled out by Tuesday. By Tuesday, things were kind of over, right? You know, that we saw that big pullback in the markets. And I would call it a bit of a turnaround week. Seems that the goal was obtained to get to certain levels, whether it was a couple of individual stocks like NVIDIA or maybe even the markets themselves. And then it looked like exhaustion just kicked in. You could see it. You could feel it. It was palpable. The idea that, you know, markets will continue to go up forever, nonstop. Now, they'll go up for, you know, years to come, in my opinion, over time, but that doesn't mean there can't be pullbacks in between. In fact, what we see is pullbacks usually are relatively healthy. They're something that when you look at where they are in terms of the big picture, it's likened to a forest that needs to every once in a while burn down to the ground and get rid of all the excess, only so that a healthy and vibrant forest can once again grow from the ashes. Maybe a little bit too much. We don't want to see a market totally burnt down to the ground. around. But you get the picture, what I'm talking about. Here's some of the stats on what's going on. I think that also maybe there was some anticipation that Powell would be a little bit more dovish, but he stood his ground, but then flip-flopped a few times during the week. You saw what happened there. And we saw bond yields right about 4% for the 10-year come in a little bit, but yet at the same time, we saw a pretty good jobs number with an unemployment rate at the end of the week that kicked up to 3.9%. So depending on what people are looking at, if they're looking at how many people are being put on the payrolls or the unemployment rate, which obviously has a lot of statistical variations within it, that's something we can look at it and say, well, maybe it's not telling the whole story. But let me tell you about the story that was told last week, and I want to give you the stats of the major markets. And we'll start with the big one that everybody talks about all the time. The most important, it seems, is the S&P 500. Market cap weighted, the major mega caps are the ones that really are the most important in there that hold the most weight. So that's been doing pretty well because we see the NVIDIAs, the Microsoft, you know, the names, excluding Tesla, excluding Apple. The rest of them are doing really well this year. For the week, though, dropped about 0.3%, up 7.4% year to date. The NASDAQ composite was down about 1.2% for the week, still up about 7.2% for the year. Interesting that the S&P 500 is now outpacing the NASDAQ. The mid-cap index, the S&P 400, also a really important area to look at when we look at the large cap, mid cap, and small caps, up 1.4% for the week. Much different story there, up 6% for the year. Dow Jones Industrials down just about 1% for the week, only up 2.7% year to date. Now, here's where it gets a little bit weird. Or as I would say, not weird, it would say telling the story in a different way. The Russell 2000 is up 0.3% for the week. So it was up for the week, but yet it was only up 2.7% year to date through Friday. Now, Bitcoin up 9%, crashed through 69,000, crashed through 70,000, onto a new record, and then just went kerplunk. Now, still up there pretty substantially, up dramatically 68%? 63% for the year. Ethereum is up even more, 14% for the week, 72% for the year. So for the week, the mega caps actually lagged. The big names that have been pulling the markets higher and higher and higher actually lagged this week. In fact, the equal weighted S&P 500 gained 1% for the week, and the S&P 500 was down. So let me say that again. The S&P 500 equal weight was up 1% for the week. The average stock, when you just take the total average, forget about market weighting or any other weighting in the S&P 500, it was up 1% for the week. The S&P 500 was down. Means that the big boys saw rotation out into positions that probably investors viewed had, I guess, better value, which makes all the sense in the world. Trees don't grow through the sky. We know that. Don't we? We do know that. We know that, right? I mean, let me restate that point. Trees don't grow to the sky, do they? No. There has to be a stopping point somewhere. Is NVIDIA's valuation appropriate at 800, 900, 1,000? I don't know. Are we going to have a new generation of really cool AI and supercomputers? Yes. Are we going to need NVIDIA, AMD, and the other companies that are involved in this to just keep on creating the level of semiconductors, the GPUs that we're seeing now? It doesn't seem like that. You have to look back in history to understand that we think about Moore's law, right? You know, the doubling of a capacity and halving of the price, and that is with storage, and it goes along with many other types of technological innovations as well. In the beginning, it's very expensive. Prices don't come down because people are just like, give it to me. I want it. I don't care what it costs. That's where we are. But that doesn't last forever. There'll be a glut. Semiconductors have got to be one of the most cyclical industries that are there. We've seen them peak and trough so many times. Am I suggesting sell NVIDIA and all your semis? No. AMD? Maybe. But the truth is that this doesn't go up forever. This could have been that exhaustion, that blow off top, that move over 900 when Goldman Sachs, when it was in the 680s, pinned an $800 price tag after it ran up so much to begin with. Maybe that was the breaking point for NVIDIA and something that we have to just keep in mind. So with that, I want to get to our guest, Tom Thornton. And let's cue that up right now and bring him on. And a special guest today is Thomas Thornton. He's a former portfolio manager, a senior trader, and a technical analyst with Level. He was with Level Global Investors and Galileo Capital. He's written a daily market note for a select group of hedge fund managers for years, and now he's also offered it, as we know, because he's been a guest before, for all investors with something called hedge fund telemetry. I love that name. His long-term focus on sentiment indicators borders on what he says, the obsessive. So they have a lot going on there when it comes to technical analysis, but also psychology, or as we call it, behavioral finance of the markets, which Thomas, hello, right now is all about, like, let's go, right? I mean, that's
hey, what's happening, Andrew? Nice to be on again.
Yeah, markets are in a one-way direction, it seems. Well, it's interesting. They seem to have one-way directions in trend. In between those, there's this weird no trend direction, right? In between that, and then they go back to just trends that are just exhausting. Is that what you see?
Well, this has been, let's just rewind a little bit. In 2021, we had a very similar market where we had the mega stocks doing most of the work on the upside. And you had a lot of others falling off, sort of tailing off towards the end of the year, but the indices kept going higher. And this last year, you had a lot of those same companies that were down 50%, and there were a lot of them, some of them even more. You can go back and look at the end of 2022. You had Meta, Google, Amazon, Apple, NVIDIA down, you know, more than 50%. A couple of them were down 60%. And they bounced back aggressively, as we know. And we created the Magnificent Seven. And I look at attribution. I've been looking at attribution studies for a long time. And a lot of other people have started to pick up on it and look at what's been working, what is working, what's leading the indices higher. And just to give you kind of a little bit of a taste, and we're talking about the NASDAQ 100. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so NVIDIA is about 34% of the NASDAQ 100's 6.6%, around 6% advance for the year. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. And and you can look at Meta, which is the next best, at around 23%. And then there's Microsoft up, you know, that's 11%, and Amazon 11%, and Ivago 10%. And that those five there have contributed to essentially the entire move in this market. Now, you have losers. You have Tesla, which is subtracted about 10%, Apple down about 8% off that
attribution
high.
of the total
in the attribution. Right. Yeah. And I am short Tesla and Apple currently. Oh. And in our fund, yep. I'm short that.
Yeah, smart, actually.
Well, it's working.
So yeah, I think it's smart. I like those. And
I'll tell you this: it's never easy being short, even when you're right. It's a lot. I guess it's easier than when you're wrong, but still there's stress because they bounce and there's all sorts of crazy stuff.
Well, the
stuff.
Other thing but is Tesla has a lot of moves that are I guess considered illogical. Apple, on the other hand, is, you know, with their constant buybacks and backing by, Berkshire, it's a difficult one because even with all the bad news that we've seen recently, it doesn't go down very much.
Well, Well, to give you kind of my thoughts on Apple, it's a no growth story. They haven't grown in the last year, and they have a phone that looks pretty similar to the last one, which is great. You really don't need to upgrade. Right. If you want a better camera and a new button, go ahead and upgrade. It's $200 more, but it's just a no growth area. And their new Vision Pro seems to be a lemon for Apple. It doesn't seem like that's going to move the needle, almost an embarrassment, because people really aren't going to spend $3,500 or $4,000 if you need the attachments for something that is going to put lines on your face. Not really something I want. But looking at the S&P attribution, and this is even a little bit more crazy, 27% of the total gain, again, around 6%, is NVIDIA. Yeah. And that is, and the next is Meta at 11%. So there's so much weighting in one stock. And granted, it's the only stock that really is growing at just an exponential rate. But that is similar to Cisco. And Cisco,
From back in the day,
Cisco in the dot-com bubble.
Yeah,
Cisco in the dot-com bubble. Everybody said, well, you got to buy the picks and shovels. And we did. I was long Cisco, and it was a fantastic stock for many years because they were building out the internet and phone companies, and large businesses and banks and everything. They needed Cisco routers for their networks. But what happened is they started to get fully built out, and then their growth started to slow. And it didn't slow necessarily at a halt, because Cisco was minting money.
Right.
But they just, the magnitude of the build out slowed. And you had companies like Nortel, which is the largest Canadian company that went out of business, a networking company, a phone company. They started to show some signs of slowing. And it's kind of similar to what's going on with the AI craze right now.
Right.
And so you had, you know, the picks and shovels, so you can put NVIDIA in there, you can put AMD, you know, a few others.
But what, NVIDIA the point is, let me just encapsulate this. What I think you're saying is, well, which we know, is that there is a top heavy amount of attribution that is being shown as the most of the growth for the indices, which is, I guess what you're saying, distorting the actual return of the S&P / NASDAQ, let's call it average weighted. It is not showing a true picture. And more so, I'm going to go take this leap for a second here. This rotation, the risk is a problem, because if any of these topple, it's a big problem. Am I getting you right?
Yeah, look, the Magnificent Seven has sort of shrunk. We lost Apple, we lost Tesla. They're both down on the year. Alphabet is now down on the year, and so can we call it Magnificent Four, or the Fantastic Four?
Fab Four.
I can sort of poke holes in the Amazon quarter with a few of their accounting things. Microsoft, here's another thing. Let me just get back to my AI thesis. You know, what really happened after the dot-com bubble burst is that an emergence of companies that learn how to monetize the internet occurred. Mm-hmm. And, you had Amazon that went up 6,300%. And drop 93%, which would be a difficult drawdown if you when people say, well, if you bought it on the IPO.
You think?
Yeah. So, but they learned how to monetize it. You had companies like Priceline learning how to monetize it. And they went down 90% from their highs. And they turned into Booking.com. And there were a lot of others that came on and learned how to use the internet to monetize it. I don't think we have that yet. I don't think we have companies that really have proven that they are going to be able to monetize the AI functionality. Maybe it'll improve efficiency and things like that, but I'm not sure if there's going to be this dramatic uptick in monetization seen in earnings right away. And I think that's the thing that we're going to, I don't know yet what companies, there's going to be new companies that we don't know about that are going to come out.
That's not the feeling of the market. The market believes it's going to be instantaneous and overnight. That well, the not, not only can we see all these companies spending money, but it's going to be immediately returned to them in productivity, like next week.
Yeah, and you can look at companies that are the, you know, they have an AI element. Adobe, that's down 7% on the year. You have Oracle that's hasn't gone anywhere, and they really haven't seen the AI improvement in their earnings. I don't think Tesla really is an AI company. They sell cars, apparently, and robots that don't exist.
And Neuralink and spaceships and things like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
And Twitter, they have a social platform.
I mean, it's but I just don't think that we have that yet to figure out where is the monetization going to happen. And look, there's a lot of companies that have blown the cover off the ball. Meta was a blowout. Microsoft wasn't that great, and it's trading about the same place.
Well, Meta was not an AI blowout. It was a expense reduction story with getting back to, taking a different turn on what they're going to be working on. Instead of the metaverse as much, it's going to be AI for maybe ad placement and optimization, right? And usage of other tools and possibly even selling some of their user information to large language models for education. I mean, Microsoft is the one that has the plugin right now. The old Clippy has come back. Remember Clippy?
Oh yeah.
Copilot is?
Well, the sad thing is there's been stories that people are just not finding the $30 a month AI tool that necessary. That's bottom line. Yeah. And so the thing about Meta is they can pull a lot of different levers to get people to buy stuff online. And that's, you know, you're on Instagram and you also see some ad that they just know so much. It's pretty
frightening.
Yeah, it is. So what else are we talking about today? Because I want to talk all about AI.
Yeah. All right. Let's just take a break real quick. When we get back after this, I want to talk about rates. I want to talk about the what is the belief out there with what is happening with rates, how it's changed over the year. Let's take a quick break and we'll do that. And let's talk about Interactive Brokers, because Interactive Brokers has key competitive advantages for sophisticated investors like you. Interactive Brokers charges USD margin loan rates from 5.83% to 6.83%, rated the lowest margin fees by stockbrokers.com. Interactive Brokers clients can also earn extra money by lending their fully paid shares of stock. Join Interactive Brokers clients from over 200 countries and territories to invest in stocks and options. You get futures, funds, and bonds on 150 global markets. Of course, rates are subject to change, but you can check it out. Go to ibkr.com/compare, because the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. All right, so Tom Thornton, rates have, so let's go back. Let's do the way back machine. Start of the year, everybody's like, hey, 7 rate cuts for the year. And then I was like, what? And now all of a sudden we're at, I don't know, maybe 3, maybe. And what happened was that the market narrative of rate cuts, you know, really moved markets up pretty strong. And then when the narrative was disproven, debunked, nobody cared. What's happening?
Well, I think that what's happened is the Fed is looking at the data, and the data is not telling them or giving them the reason or excuse to cut rates. I think that financial conditions remain a lot looser than they were before they started to tighten rates. Mm-hmm. You had an amazing amount of people off sides in the equity and bond market. People don't realize in the bond market, it was really people were very offside. They were short bonds in October, short stocks in October. And right, when Janet Yellen,
for my listeners, can you just explain what that means, please?
Well, it's you can have CTAs. CTAs you might hear about. These are trend following accounts, and they're mechanically driven, multi-billion dollar accounts, and they basically follow the trend. And the trend in for rates was higher, so they were short bonds. And inflation was still an issue. But when Janet Yellen came out and with the Treasury and said, here's our Treasury issuance schedule, it was all short-term, notes, nothing in the longer duration. So that basically caused the bond market to rally in a big way. So you had 2-year yields went from, you know, over 5% to under 4%. But the problem is right now is you have the 2-year back at it's above 460. It hit 470 recently. Mm-hmm. The risk is that inflation stays higher. And and that's the problem for the Fed. That's the problem for the Treasury, because they keep, I mean, if the Treasury's just keeps refining our national debt with T-bills, short-term debt, I mean, it's a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. Mm-hmm. And higher deficits are not good for the bond market. We have incredibly high deficits, even with our economy doing as well as it has been. It remains strong. Labor remains incredibly strong. We haven't seen the Fed hikes hit the labor market. You haven't seen unemployment move higher. It's extremely low. And it's very hard to look back on other timeframes and say, well, we're going to have a soft landing. You had one soft landing in 1995, and you also had an unemployment that was dropping from 6% and it went lower. We're at 3.8%, mm-hmm. under 4% right mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. That's going to be, you know, tough to keep under control. But I don't think the Fed, again, I think the inflation data, the risk, and it's out of consensus, is that inflation starts to rear its ugly head to say it starts to show increases. And you have people like Paul Krugman who have said, look, the 6-month rolling average of the PCE is under 2%, and the Fed should cut rates with that. Well, a 6-month rolling average, if you start rolling it out further from this, you know, every month drops off, you're going to start to see that increase, and you're going to start to see that increase with the CPI. And one thing that I watch really closely is within CPI data, the PPI data, is energy prices. And energy prices, the way they measure it is they look at unleaded gas, gasoline in the U.S. Mm-hmm. It's up around 8% from the January low. And I think that's going to start to be noticed in the next couple of CPI reports. And the last thing I'll say about it, so I don't run on, is that the CPI bottomed last June at 3%. That was the low. Mm-hmm. And when we start to get through that and we look at whether it's month over month or, more importantly, year over year, we have the risk going into the summer where that number starts to tick higher. And I think that's going to spook a lot of people. It's not good politically for a president that's running for re-election. I don't want to talk about politics because I'm trying to tune out all of it. Just wake up in November and hope we're still alive. So that's my view on politics.
That tells a lot right there, though.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of really either candidate. Either party. I'm like a lot.
But we need to know what's going on for the aspect of, markets. And while we all know that who is president is really meaningless for markets, it only happens their policy years after, right? We know that that's a big issue. You can't take credit.
So I'll tell you this, mm-hmm. Andrew.
Yes.
I think the reckoning with all the stimulus that's been injected into the market, with all the there's a lot of stealth QE that's happened with the Treasury, and I'm not going to bore everybody, but there's been a lot of liquidity brought into the market, and that could be political. I don't know. Some people might say that, but it's going to run out, and we have an increasing deficit that is happening. We've had a stock market that has gone straight up early this year. You've also had rates go up. There's going to be a point where if rates continue to go up and they, let's say, the worst thing in the world for the bond market is a quick spike higher. It's a silent scream from bond investors, but that's the worst thing that can happen if we get a sudden spike up in rates. If that happens, that will, the equity markets will eventually wake up and go, oh, this could be a problem. And with all the money that's been jammed into the technology sector and every single bank brokerage data I've read, it's jammed into tech. That's what people want. That's what people are buying. And if everybody says, well, I can get out before the, you know, before it ends, well, that's not true. They will get blown up and things will back out. So my cautious stance, look, everybody's had good gains. If you're in passive funds, don't be afraid to take a little profit and sit some cash on the sideline. You actually get paid sitting in cash these days.
Oh,
so it's not the worst idea. Yeah.
That's special. I like that because, I mean, there was a time that it cost you to stay in cash. Totally different right now. But everybody's on one side of the boat. People positioned very long in tech. And I think there's, you know, you combine that with your conversation about the rotation of where things are. I mean, while I think the algos do their job at trying to hold up markets, you know, generally speaking, like you say, the attribution that is so high for some of these major companies, whereas it just, you know, buying begets bigger, begets even bigger, begets buying. That whole concept of the market cap weighted index is something that could backfire as well. So what do you do? So when is it time? What, as a hedge fund guy, as the writer of hedge fund telemetry, someone who's managed portfolios for a long time, what are some relatively simple ways to that maybe you or hedge funds hedge?
That's I think the hardest thing to do when you're a long short hedge fund is to be able to manage both sides, especially in a market like this, because I will tell you, it's been incredibly hard finding anything that works on the short side. Yeah. It's been very hard. And I have a bit of a value bent. And so I've been buying a lot of energy, which honestly are up, which is good. And I think energy still has a lot of value there. So I'm trying to find places where others aren't, and I'm shorting things where people are crowded. It's not easy. Someone said, we have all the elements of a market mania top. I just don't have the exact catalyst and day that it pops. So I think that's the key. So the simple thing is, don't make your portfolio overcomplicated. If you're a retail investor, it's okay to have some cash. It's okay because you get paid. And it's not like, you know, avoid the FOMO, avoid the YOLO. The call buying is insane. And these are not signs of a really good, strong, healthy market, because it's sort of a musical chairs type market. Again, we talked about the Magnificent Seven. I've seen three of them go down on the year so far. If we start to see another one, or those start to fade, or the tech loving sector, you know, hit a speed bump or move lower, just be careful, because that dip may not hold. And so sitting in cash is not the worst idea. And having a little extra at this point it's not going to penalize you. And that, I think, is my safest investment thought.
All right. Well, you know, obviously the average investor, you know, look at things like, for example, Reddit's coming out, you know, with a $10 billion valuation on an IPO. And, you know, what does that mean? Well, that means that basically investors, the retail investor out there, some institutions too, is going to be saddled with this company that's not making money, never made any money, may have a great time trading it, but the idea is it's being offloaded, as I see it. That's what an IPO is, right? It's offloading shares from one party to another. On one hand, you would say to yourself, is it that they're doing this because they can unlock value that isn't available in a private company? Or are they trying to dupe the investor, the average investor, into buying something that will obviously get the whole hype train going? And the average investor is, you know, looking at what's happening. And a lot of people, I think, have a lot of FOMO. You know, somebody wrote me the other night, I wish I had more NVIDIA. And I wrote him back, said everybody on the planet, right? I mean, hello. I mean, that's obvious. You know, the question is, when do you do so or not? I'm a little skeptical that they're going to keep on going up to the moon. Semiconductors, as you've seen in the past, have a definite and definitive cycle, right? Don't they?
They used to. And, you know, the thing that's interesting also is that not all semiconductors are NVIDIA and are benefiting from AI. I mean, you can look at, there's several of them out there that are semiconductors that go into other things. Mm-hmm. ADI, Texas Instruments, Microchip, Ansys, or that's a software. Skyworks. I'm just looking at what's down on the day. Teradyne. Those are down on the year.
Right.
And those go into cars and industrial. Intel, I mean, Intel's down 15%. And they actually do have some AI stuff. They actually make a lot of money as well. But their growth isn't what NVIDIA is. Mm-hmm. And it's a market also where people wake up every day and they see what's trading that's green and they rush into it.
Right.
And they're just these vagabonds that run into whatever's green that day and hope it goes a little higher. And that's a scary type of mentality. But, you know, as far as Reddit goes, look, there's a lot of companies that go public that aren't profitable. There's a lot of companies that are doing very, very well in this market that aren't profitable. But it's that constant carrot in front of the horse that hopes that they will get profitable one day.
Yeah, the path to profitability is what we call it.
Right. And I tend to like companies that have a little better profitability and visibility that I can feel comfortable owning, just because I can fall back on that.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of the energy names trade in the, you know, they're managing the lower crude prices pretty well. And again, I think crude could surprise people on the upside. And if that happens, then all those nomads that look for green are going to start buying energy stocks, mm-hmm. hopefully.
Once again, right, like they did a couple of years back. I want to close on this item here. I've seen a lot of comparatives recently to the year, you know, the dot-com bubble and looking at, oh, the top 10 S&P 500. There was a piece out by Apollo a couple of weeks back that talked about how, you know, you look at the constituents of the S&P 500 and you look at the top 10 from market cap, and boy, the P.E. ratio of those are so out. Crazy above what they were, the same top 10, well, the 10 top 10 companies of 1999. And I'm thinking to myself, is that really something that is even comparable?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that, like, I can look at NVIDIA right now and it's trading at 32 times earnings.
Mm-hmm.
And that justifies a lot of people, their ability to say, I can own it here. Mm-hmm. That's what they're looking at. I can look at AMD, and which has had a tremendous run, and that's trading at 50 times earnings. It's never really traded that high in years. So I think that you have to be really selective as far as what you're in. And I don't think, look, there's a lot of people that will dispel the dot-com bubble comparison because the PEs didn't exist or back then, or they were extremely high,
mm-hmm.
versus today. But I will also say that you also had Cisco peaked at somewhere around $500 billion in market cap. Still to this day, they've never seen that level again.
Yeah.
But you had NVIDIA go up $250 billion in one day after earnings. And that is 2.5 times their 2025 revenue guidance. So that to me says we're getting a little cuckoo, people.
And by the way, let me just go backwards. The PEs that you just talked about, particularly with AMD, is that a trailing 12 months that you were mentioning or forward?
That is the best going. That's the best EPS right now, current PE.
I thought the forward PE was some ridiculous level.
Well, you can spin it a bunch of different ways, as you know.
Yeah, obviously.
You know, the main thing, and I know that we're closing here, is that I just think everybody should be very, very cautious, avoid the FOMO. There's been a lot of big moves that when you're in a crowded space and people run for the exits, it's hard to get out sometimes. And a lot of times I can remember back in the day, people would buy JDS Uniphase, JDS2. And I remember there were a lot of people that would say to me, hey, I bought it, I'm down, when should I buy more? Mm-hmm. And I just said, I don't think you should buy more. And people just didn't get it. They didn't realize that some of these stocks would never go to those places again. And that could be something that happens or takes a break for years before they hit highs again.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember what JDSU back in the day, what the bulls, the acronym JDSU stood for?
Yeah. Just don't sell us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you that was a very similar picks and shovels. It's going to build out the internet, optical networking. And it was a good company. It was just obscene and mm-hmm. chased higher by the momentum crowd.
Yeah, it was. Thomas Thornton, I appreciate it. Head Fund Telemetry. We'll put information on how to get your information, follow you on Twitter, all that over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com under the show notes for episode number 859. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. All right, talk to you soon.
All right, bye. And that's going to wrap up this show with this episode of The Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged as well on Tuesday nights. We spend some time together at 9 o'clock, but also you can find that in any fine podcasting app. Myself and John C. Dvorak, we get it on. We talk about some cool things. Make sure to listen to that. That's dhunplugged.com. If you want to talk to me, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click Ask Andrew. Click Contact Us. You want a portfolio review, whatever's going on with your situation, you just want to talk, reach out, give us a little bit of comment, a little bit of commentary on what you think of the show. Feel free to do so. There's a two-way street. It's not just one where I'm talking and you're just listening. Love to hear from you as well. Thanks for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you next week where we have a really good guest coming up next week as well. We have Paul Barron. We're talking about crypto a lot next week, so make sure to be there. See you again then. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.